Hi, everybody. I'm Beattie Combs-Redos, and welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. I really think that these days, more than ever, we all need people to talk to, and I don't just mean therapists, about what is going on in our lives, politically and financially and with the pandemic. And people are so concerned about their jobs, about their businesses, about contacting and contracting the virus. And what I'm finding, not just with my patients, is that the majority of people that I talk to, friends and colleagues, are feeling very, very overwhelmed these days. And, of course, I have been encouraging you for the last number of years. Today happens to be the 310th Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network, that we should not necessarily just wait for crises in our lives to reach out and ask for help. And I think that it is so important with all the changes and all the different transitions that people are going through, that we really give ourselves permission to have real life conversations without feeling the need to be telling people, yes, everything is really, really okay. I'm looking every day at the depression statistics since the coronavirus. I mean, the depression rates have really gone up. Pre the coronavirus, 16 million adults in the United States, which translates into 1 in 5 Americans, are suffering. And yes, the word suffering is not an understatement with depression. 40 million adults are having to deal with a variety of different anxiety disorders. And a lot of people, they will email me and they really want to know definitively that when I talk about clinical depression, what exactly do I mean? Well, this is right from the DSM-5. Depressed mood, most of the day, nearly every day. And I want you to ask yourselves these questions. Is this something that you are dealing with and perhaps even suffering with most days, nearly every day? What about markedly diminished interest or pleasure in almost all the activities nearly every day in your life? What about also significant weight loss or weight gain? Or how is your sleep? I know that so many people these days are having increasing difficulty staying asleep, going to sleep. They are worried. They are nervous. They are anxious. And what about fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day? So many people who've lost their businesses and lost their jobs. It is so easy to be able to feel worthless and feel guilty, certainly about situations that we have had absolutely no control over at all. Or what about our thinking? Are we finding that it is really difficult to think and to concentrate? And I have found, even in my own practice, that there are patients who are thinking more and more about death. And what is the point of going on? And if you are dealing with some or all of these symptoms, I really, really encourage you to not wait any longer, but today is the day when you can reach out and ask for help. I know that with the insurance plans, there are certainly mental health benefits. And of course, the very, very best thing that you can do is to get a referral from somebody that you trust. And I know it is hard to bring up the subject of depression and anxiety and mental health issues, but you would really, really be surprised how many people, they may not be discussing it with you, your friends or your family, are really going through a very, very difficult time. You know, I cite the divorce statistics every week. 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages, 74% of third marriages. We're seeing that the suicide really rates are up. Four women are killed every day by their partners, so that people around the world are really suffering. And what I learned a long time ago is that we don't need to suffer in silence, and that life is way too complicated to try and navigate the ups and downs and the upsets on our own. And I really hope that over the years that I have convinced you that it is a strength and it is not a weakness when you are feeling that you want or that you need a second opinion. We get second opinions about all kinds of things in our lives. So why not get a second opinion or a new perspective on what is going on or what is not going on in your life, particularly with the pandemic and the consequences that so many people are having to live with as a result of the pandemic. I mean, I hear people every single day, even people who have health insurance, are very, very concerned whether or not their health care plans are going to cover potential catastrophic illnesses. And with the election that's going to be coming up, things are very, very much in flux. And people are scared. And what about the social isolation? You know, it's one thing to be talking about the benefits of doing our work in our pajamas, in our homes and in our apartments, but the social isolation has really, really had a major negative impact on millions and millions of people in this country and also around the world. In fact, I was reading an article just before the show about what we need to know about the loneliness epidemic. And this is a piece, and it was written by a public health person, and she was saying that we live in an era in which communication seems simpler, supposedly simpler, in times of the past. And in essence, a coworker was one email, it still is one email away, a friend is one text away, and a loved one is one video chat away, although it is certainly not the same of just meeting up with somebody for dinner or for a cup of coffee. And although communication may be easier in some fashion and faster, connection, real connection, may still be complicated. Therefore, despite the reputation for practical societal advancement with our technology, what we are seeing is that the loneliness epidemic is really continuing to increase. And what we're seeing, too, is that in the last 50 years, the rates of loneliness have doubled in the United States. And interestingly, in a survey of over 20,000 American adults, it was found that almost half of the respondents, I mean, that's really incredible, 20,000 random American adults, and it was found that almost half the respondents reported feeling alone, left out, and isolated. And further, one in four Americans shared that they really feel understood. And one in five people believe they rarely or never feel close to other people. You know, the question, of course, and the answer, and I'm sure you know the answer, it's pretty straightforward. The question is, loneliness detrimental to our health? Well, of course, loneliness is detrimental not only to our mental health, but to our physical health as well. Because loneliness has been associated with cardiovascular problems and premature death. Lonelier individuals are less likely to achieve quality sleep. Lonely individuals experience reductions in reasoning and creativity. In addition to these reduced abilities, loneliness affects workplace productivity, of course, as lonely individuals report less job satisfaction and are more likely to face unemployment. Loneliness is also commonly correlated with mental health concerns such as anxiety, depression, and suicidality. Similarly, loneliness is often associated with poor coping mechanisms such as compulsive technology use, smoking, and self-harm. And also, which is, I thought, very, very interesting, is that beyond all of these issues, poor social skills have commonly been linked to loneliness and related mental health problems. And the researchers at the University of Arizona have highlighted that individuals with poor social skills often identify as lonely, because these people, they isolate themselves. They don't feel comfortable in social situations. They don't feel comfortable reaching out. And according to a recent study published in the Harvard Business Review, workers who experienced higher levels of loneliness also reported fewer promotions. Obviously, they're depressed, they're not doing as well in terms of productivity, less job satisfaction, and a greater likelihood for frequently changing jobs. The study also illuminated, and I found this result to be very interesting and surprising. The study found that guess who where the loneliness of professionals, lawyers, doctors, and engineers were the occupations reporting the highest levels of loneliness. And individuals who are lacking connection in their lives may turn to the digital realm to quench their isolation, longing for connection. Someone who is lonely may be more connected to his or her phone, and certainly to than to other people. And in a survey exploring the social media patterns of 1,700 young adults, it was found that individuals who logged in for a half an hour per day felt less lonely compared to individuals who logged on for more than 2 hours daily. Further, participants who logged in 9 times weekly felt less isolated when compared to respondents who checked over 50 times per week. But the reality is that loneliness is on the rise, and the negative influence of loneliness on well-being, not just our mental well-being, but our physical well-being, are very, very difficult to deny. And since loneliness, of course, it's a subjective experience, it is difficult to gain clarity into what variables are contributing to the increase in isolation. The factors explored highlight common causes that are likely to influence loneliness. And it is important for all of us to consider these factors in order to proactively prevent loneliness and combat the consequences of the pandemic. So for those of you who may be listening to the show right now, how do you feel? Do you feel connected Do you have a partner? Do you have family? Do you have a community that when you are going through a tough time, that you have the confidence that there are going to be people there who you can actually reach out and talk to, and not just talk about the pandemic, and not just talk about diets, and not just talk about the weather. And this is why it is so important for all of us that we have, even if it's just one person in our lives that we can be honest with, and that we can feel comfortable expressing the full gamut of our feelings, our fears, our anger, our disappointments, our loneliness. And then of course, after going through all of the issues and the problems, my mantra, as you all know, is acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we possibly can. So then the next order of business is, what do we need to do? For example, if loneliness happens to be your number one problem, I mean, what are some things that you can do beginning today that will help alleviate the loneliness and the feelings of loneliness that you experience in your life? And it may be reaching out to support groups online initially, although fortunately things are starting to open up. We don't know what's going to be happening in the fall. But again, we all need people. We all need to be able to communicate with other people, not just when things are going well, but also when things are difficult and we are going through difficult times in our lives. So it becomes a question of problem, some solution. What are you going to do? You may want to call a rabbi or a minister or a therapist. Or you may want to confide in your family doctor that you're having a really difficult time, and no, you don't need medication. What you do need are connections, and perhaps some or all of these people would have some really, really good ideas so that you would begin then to tackle the problem. I think that what happens so often, we will go around in circles. We'll say we're overweight, we don't like our bodies, we don't like our friends, we don't like our partner, we don't like our work. And yet it's so easy to spend weeks and months and years complaining about the things that are not working in our life rather than sitting down and looking at the various different aspects in our lives and trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to do? We understand that we're concerned about money. So what are some things that we can do this week or this month that will help to alleviate some of our financial concerns? Do we need to put ourselves on a budget? Do we need to spend less? Do we need to talk to a financial advisor who might be able to give us some direction? You don't have to have millions of dollars to talk to a financial advisor who would be able, since that person is hopefully an expert, that would be able to give you some direction. If you're looking at your career and you're really not happy, where things are at, or perhaps you've been one of the unlucky people who has been downsized or where the company has gone out of business and where you have lost your job and you are on unemployment insurance. So now is the time. It's actually a good time. You know, you may not have ever wanted this time to happen, to take a second look at how you were spending the majority of your days in terms of the kind of work you are doing. I know people who are making 360-degree shifts I have a patient who was in the financial sector for most of her life. And she lost her job a couple of months ago and was really trying to dig in deep and figure out what does she really want to do. And this is going to be a surprise for many of you, but she has decided to go into the cinnamon bun business and has spent the last number of months perfecting baking cinnamon buns. And she was telling me very, very recently that she's now confident and she's now in a position where she's going to be reaching out to various different bakeries and see whether or not she's going to maybe be able to become the next Sally Fields. So this is a time, you know, when crisis looms upon us. We can give up or we can start to become more and more creative within ourselves. And if you need help to do that, that's a really good thing, too, to be able to sit down with a career counselor and really do some brainstorming. And who would have thought this woman who was in the financial world and who'd been extremely successful in the financial world was now seriously contemplating having a cinnamon bun business. So, you know, you may have had all kinds of dreams and wishes and fantasies of things that you might have wanted to do. And who knows, this may be your time to make a 360-degree change that potentially could really improve the quality of your life mentally and physically and financially. So it's important. It's important to stop and reevaluate and figure out what now, what is going to be the next step. And also just looking at our mental growth and our personal and spiritual growth, you have to ask yourself, are you basically contented where you are at? And if the answer is yes, then you need to continue doing exactly what you're doing. But if the answer is no, this is a really good time to do some brainstorming and some self-reflection. And again, maybe discuss this with an expert in a particular field and see where is this going to take you. Here we've had a major, major crisis with the pandemic. And virtually everybody that I know is in flux in one way or another. So we panic and we're angry and we're upset and we're depressed. And once we really process some of these feelings, then we need to figure out plan B and what next and what is going to be some of the things that we need to do that are really in our best interest. And I think a lot of people are really, really reevaluating their lives. They're reevaluating their relationships. They're reevaluating where they want to live. They're reevaluating how they want to live. So if you are in this position, it's easy to look at all of this as a disaster, that my world is coming to an end, and it may very well feel like that. And it's okay to be angry and depressed and upset, but we can't give ourselves the luxury of staying in that mode for too long. There needs to be time to reevaluate and reflect and do some honest introspection and then come up with a plan B and a plan C. I read a very, very interesting piece that I want to share with you. And this happened to be in Thrive Global. And the heading of this article was, What I Learned at 30 That I Wish I Had Learned at 20. How Bringing Clarity and Intention to All Areas of My Life Changed the Game and Changed My Life. And I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs from this article. This woman starts by saying, generally speaking, I've always been good with goals. I set them. I work hard to achieve them. I rinse and repeat. And over the last 10 years, I've been addicted to achieving my goals, specifically those of a professional nature. And as far as achieving my goals is concerned, I have been nailing it, or so I thought. So she goes on to say that what I didn't realize is that all of the momentum created from achieving my goals was actually causing me to drift further and further from the life that I really wanted. For the past 10 years, I was being intentional, taking initiative, securing opportunities, climbing the corporate ladder, and enjoying the hard-earned rewards in my life. Everything I keep telling college students to do over. So what exactly became the problem? The problem, she says, is that I lost sight of the forest for the trees. Each goal was a new tree that distracted me from looking across the forest at my bigger picture. And like most things in life, it took a couple of big obstacles to actually shake me and wake me up from my drift. And that is the really positive thing when we are sometimes forced to stop the momentum that we find ourselves in. And for many people, for years, and for probably the majority of people, for most of their lives. She says, I faced obstacles such as a broken relationship, followed by all the attendant, the heartaches and the self-doubt. And I also faced complete burnout at work to the point where I couldn't remember the last time that I slept through the night without waking up in a deep sweat. Now, can you relate to any of this at all? So here we have a woman. She had a major crisis in her life. She thought that all was well. She was making money. She was achieving her goals. She was nailing everything that she thought was important. But then look at what happened. It forced her to pause, as I think these days a lot of people are pausing and reevaluating what we are doing with our lives. What is the bigger picture? And I think that so often we get so caught up in overachieving in one area of life, and with many, many people, of course, it's the career, to pay decent attention to other areas of life, such as relationships and health and personal development. And the altitude from which I think that most people oftentimes navigate, it takes you further and further away from what is really important in terms of achieving the most fulfilling things in life. And I wonder how many of us, you know, how many of you, you know, have been on this track where we think that we are nailing it, that we are living the life that we really want to live. And then suddenly something happens, such as the pandemic. and we lose our jobs and we're on unemployment and people are getting sick around us. And I think that it is forcing more and more people, and I think it's actually a good thing, to ask the important questions, which is, you know, what do I want? What do I not want? How am I living my life? Is this really, really the way I want to be living my life? Reevaluating personal relationships, reevaluating professional relationships. So in this particular article, what I learned at 30 that I wish I'd learned at 20, she talks about a life plan. Because when you think about it, right, people create plans all the time. We do. You wouldn't think about launching a business, as an example, without first creating some semblance of a business plan. Where is this business going to be? What kind of a business is it? What are the expenses going to be? Am I going to have to hire people? Am I going to be able to do this solo? So a life plan is exactly what it sounds like. You are charting out a course to guide you to your ideal life. And a life plan, it helps you address your current realities and clarify your priorities. And I think that, you know, she says it sounds perfect for someone in their 20s. I think it sounds perfect for people, whatever age they are, and to do this on a fairly regular basis. You know, I used to talk about doing this once a year to take a look at, you know, where am I and where have I been and what do I want and what do I not want and what kind of changes that I really need to make. But if you don't start planning your life, life just keeps happening to you. And then you start to, we all do this, you know, we start to make excuses for why you need to push back the life planning exercise. And before you know it, months and maybe even years have gone by. So do not wait for the perfect time to magically appear. So we're looking at relationships and money and work and lifestyle and geography. And once you've created your first life plan, it's not that this is going to be a plan that is never going to change. You just need to review this and refine it going forward to make sure that you are being authentic, to make sure that you are being honest with yourself. For example, she talks about, I'm 1 year in, and I'd say that this life planning thing has been working for me. So these are some of the things that this young woman has done. I established the areas of my life that are important to me. And this is something that we all need to do, to ask ourselves, are we living a life that is important to us? It may have been important to our parents or to our grandparents, but am I being authentic? Am I living a life that is meaningful for me? And that is something, again, that we need to be really honest with ourselves about. Also, determine their current condition and then prioritize them. Am I on track? And what is my envisioned future for each of the things that I think that I would like to do? And then outline the commitments that will take me from the current to the future state. Because I think it's really easy to have all kinds of plans and fantasies and wishes and hopes. But then there needs to be a call to action. And what will this life plan look like? What are you going to need to do? What are the changes that you are going to need to make in the various different facet of your life to get to where you want to go. So we're looking at careers. We're looking at your relationships. We're looking at money. And I think that unless we give ourselves permission to actually stop and reflect, it's kind of just like being in a circle where you never quite stop. You're just kind of going, and then before you know it, you wake up and you realize that I am not living the kind of life that I hoped to have. So I think that one of the things that this pandemic has done for all of us is that it has simply forced us, because most of us have been home now for a number of months, to really take a close, honest look at all of these things. And what I'm noticing with friends and with patients is that people are starting to make some real changes. And they're starting to say things to me like, you know, I thought that this was really the relationship that I wanted to be in, or I thought that this was really the place that I wanted to be living in, or I thought that this was my dream job, but upon reflection, what I am discovering is that this is not the case and that I am committed. And of course, it takes commitment to make some changes. Now, I hope you're not going to, if you find that life really needs to be changed 360 degrees, I hope you're not going to think this is going to happen in a week or a month. And what I really suggest is that people just write down, you know, where I'm at and where I would like to be, and to then begin to slowly take the necessary steps to get you to really where you want to go. So do not beat yourself up. I mean, this is a process. It took a lot. It took a lot of guts and a lot of chutzpah for you to be doing this in the first place. And yes, this was really forced upon all of us to stop and reflect and reset. And I really love to hear from all of you how your voyage is going. You know, now that there have been a lot of changes and a lot of forced changes that you're having to deal with. Well, moving along here, this is a Harvard study, and I always love to read, bona fide research studies that have to do with having a happier life, having a longer life. So this is a piece, Healthy Lifestyle, Five Keys to a Longer Life. So this was written by a woman, Monique Tello, who is a doctor. How is it that the United States spends the most money on healthcare and yet still has one of the lowest life expectancies of all the developed nations? She says, to be specific, $9,400 per capita and 79 years is the age that Americans are living until. So she says, maybe those of us in healthcare have been looking at it all wrong for too long. So researchers from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, they conducted a massive study of the impact of health habits on life expectancy using data from the well-known Nurses' Health Study and the Health Professionals Follow-Up Study. So this means that they had data on a huge number of people over a very long period of time. The study included over 78,000 women and followed them from 1980 to 2014. And it also included over 40,000 men. So this is a big, big study, and followed them from 1986 to 2014. So this is over 120,000 participants, 34 years of data for women, and 28 years of data for men. So I would say that this was a very, very reliably done study. So the researchers, they looked at the data on diet, physical activity, body weight, smoking, and alcohol consumption that had been collected from regularly administered validated questionnaires. So what exactly is a healthy lifestyle? So these five areas were chosen because prior studies have shown them to have a large impact on risk of premature death. So this is how these healthy habits were defined and measured. Number one, healthy diet, which was calculated and rated based on the reported intake of healthy foods like vegetables and fruits and nuts and whole grains and healthy fats and omega-3 fatty acids and unhealthy foods like red and processed meats, sugar, sweetened beverages, trans fat, and sodium. Two, healthy physical activity level, which was measured at least 30 minutes per day, a moderate to vigorous activity daily. Number three, healthy body weight, defined as normal body mass, which is between 18.5 and 24.9. Smoking, well, there's no healthy amount of smoking, right? There is none. And number five, moderate alcohol intake, which was measured as between 5 and 15 grams per day for women and 5 to 30 grams per day for men. Researchers also looked at data on age, ethnicity, and medication use, as well as comparison data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Surveys and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's wide-ranging online data for epidemiologic research. So does a healthy lifestyle actually make a difference? I mean, that's really the bottom line. We can talk about diet, we can talk about exercise, but does it really make a difference? So as it turns out, of course, healthy habits make a huge difference. According to this analysis, people who met criteria for all five habits enjoyed significantly impressively longer lives than those who had none. 14 years for women and 12 years for men if they had these habits at age 50. And people who had none of these habits were far more likely to die prematurely from cancer or cardiovascular disease. So are you going to really take this in? I know that Dr. Gary Null talks about this every single day. So this is not just an advertisement that he and me and people around the world are trying to get you to buy in on. The fact is that the data is clear. Study investigators also calculated life expectancy by how many of these five healthy habits people had. So just one healthy habit, and it didn't matter which one, just one, extended life expectancy by 2 years in men and women. And not surprisingly, the more healthy habits that people had, the longer their lifestyles. And this is one of those situations where, you know, the author talks about wanting to reprint the graphs for you because it is huge. And it confirms prior similar research. And there's been a lot of prior similar research. In fact, there was a 2017 study using health data from the Health and Retirement Study, and they found that people 50 and over who were normal weight, had never smoked and drank alcohol in moderation, lived on average, this is really, I think it's amazing, 7 years longer. And a 2012 mega-analysis of 15 international studies that included over 500,000 participants, 500, that is 500,000 people, found that over half of premature deaths were due to unhealthy lifestyle factors such as poor diet, inactivity, obesity, excessive alcohol intake, and smoking. And the list of supporting research happens to go on and on. So what is the problem? The research is clear. So as the authors of this study point out that in the United States, we tend to spend outlandishly on developing fancy drugs and other treatments for diseases rather than on trying to prevent them. And this is a huge, huge problem because experts have suggested that the best way to help people make healthy diets and lifestyle changes is at the large-scale population level through public health efforts and policy changes and, of course, education. You know, kind of like what happened with the motorcycle helmets and the seatbelt legislation. But the fact is that we have made a little, not a lot, progress with tobacco and trans fat legislation, and yet people are going to do what they want to do. And this is why I know that with my own patients, I want people, at least people who I'm working with, to be very, very clear about what it is that they are doing that is either, hopefully, in their best interest, and I want them to also be very, very aware of the things that they do that are destructive, self-destructive, and self-sabotaging. So I don't think that we need more and more and more research to tell us about the importance of a healthy diet and physical activity and a healthy body weight, and that it is not a good thing to smoke, and that it is not a good thing to have excessive amounts. And of course, that's even a question about, you know, should I have a little bit? Is a little bit of alcohol okay? And I think that there's a lot of controversy about that as well. So, again, are you wanting to do what is in your best interest? And you may say that you are, but of course the proof is really in the pudding. And people will say, well, I'm depressed, so I'm going to eat, or I'm depressed and I don't feel like exercises. And yet look at the consequences that affect us emotionally and physically when we live our lives in ways that are destructive and self-destructive. And of course, and that includes our relationships. And, you know, about relationships, this is something else that I haven't actually asked you recently to take a look at the people in your life and how supportive and how important it is to have people in your life who are loving and who are supportive and who are there for you, not just when things are going well, but when things are going badly as well. And, of course, for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie show now for the last number of years, you know my feelings about eliminating toxins, including all toxic people, which also includes friends and family from your life. Because if we allow it, toxic people will kill us in one way or another. So it's not just about looking at food, and it's not just about looking at how much we're exercising in our lifestyle, but the importance of looking honestly at our relationships, at our significant relationships, at our family relationships, and making sure that we surround ourselves with good, decent people who add something to our lives rather than people who take and take and who are basically poisonous to us and to our environment. So I know that every week I ask you to do a lot of work. And I suppose that's Dede Cohan-Bredos, the educator. I want you to all have good and happy lives. And yet it just doesn't happen on its own. There are things that we need to do, including the diet and the exercise and the yoga and the meditation and the positive visualization and making sure that we're really eating well and dealing with the issues in our lives that happen to get in the way of our lives and our relationships. So the fact of the matter is that I don't know anybody at all who's just able to swim through life without having a plan, as the previous article that I was citing really talks about. We have to be conscious of how we are living in all facets of our lives. And if things are not working in an area of life, then it really becomes a question of what are we going to do. We can spend the majority of time just complaining and moaning and whining. And of course, there are certain things that we absolutely, we can't change. We can't change our history. But what we are able to do, in the present and in the moment is to make sure that whatever it is that we are engaged in, and the people that we are engaging with, that these are situations and people that are supportive and that our choices are constructive. So it really necessitates our being very, very committed. I mean, it really boils down to one thing, and that is being committed and being aware of living our lives in ways that are really in our best interest. And that does not mean being selfish. It means being aware of how we are going about navigating our lives, whether we're doing things that are good for us, or whether there is something going on internally, whether it has to do with past history, it has to do with a certain kind of conditioning that we may have had when we were, growing up as children, where we go on and on and on living our lives in ways where we are self-sabotaging ourselves over and over and over again. And, you know, when I talk about every week, when I talk about the divorce rate, and people are always surprised to hear that the divorce rate for third marriages is 74%. And I haven't looked at what the divorce statistics are for fourth and fifth and sixth marriages. But again, you know, it's one thing to say how sad and how disappointing, but people who are going through one marriage and two marriages and three marriages and four marriages and more have to be willing to take a look at themselves and ask themselves, you know, one really important question, which is, what is it about me that is continuing to end up in situations with people that are not working? Does it have to do with my unfinished business? Does it have to do with abuse of various different kinds stemming from my childhood? What is it? What is it about me? Rather than blaming the other person. So what I have found, whether or not you are a Serena Williams or whether or not you are someone who's really at the top of your game, it takes a lot of work to stay focused and to not get off track. I mean, we all get off track from time to time, but then the importance of figuring out constantly what it is, what kinds of adjustments that we need to make so that we are going to be able to attain our goals, live our lives to the fullest, so that we can really and genuinely be happy with our own individual lives and in our relationships. So, you know, when I chose the Beatles song, you know, Help, I Need Somebody to Talk To, I think that it is much too much to ask of people to try to figure all of this out on their own. I mean, we ask experts for all kinds of things. You know, we go to gyms, we have coaches, we have financial advisors. And what is more important in our lives than making sure that we are on track emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically and in our relationships? So that I hope every single week that I have convinced you that if you are finding that you are off track or you have fallen off track, that you will give yourself permission to reach out and get some really good help for yourself. So everybody, another hour. I can't believe it. I'm sitting in my office here on the Upper West Side in New York City. Another hour has come and gone. And again, I want to thank you all for listening to the show and for going to the SBD archives here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I will talk with you next week and every week. And I leave you with my most favorite song. And that is what the world needs now is love, sweet love. And boy, do we need it now more than ever. And two things. I want to make sure that you're doing everything that you possibly can to love yourself. And we all need to do a much better job to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.